Blog Talk Radio.
It's Tuesday night at 10 o'clock, and we're on for a special evening. It's the latest episode of Graphic Policy Radio. We just want to start off by first saying that our thoughts are with the people of Boston who suffered a tragic attack yesterday. And you're in our minds. I know I've got a lot of friends who live up there, so it definitely hit close to home for me. So how are you doing, Alana?
Well, that's certainly been a challenging couple of days. But I'm glad we're doing the show tonight. We were originally going to have it yesterday, but we postponed it. But it's good to be back doing the show again. It's been a long time.
Yes, it's been a bit too long. But yeah, it feels really good to get back into the groove of things and get on the air and chat, because, oh my, do we have a lot of stuff to talk about.
So,
I've got a long list of things to discuss. Definitely not a definitive list of things, but I figure we might as well start off with some of the big news that's occurred while we were off the air, the biggest of which is DC killing off yet another Robin. In a supposedly planned out move, at least that's the claim of writer Grant Morrison, DC Comics has killed off the latest Robin, Damian Wayne, who was the clone son of Batman and his rival villain, sometimes lover, Talia al Ghul. Let me start off with saying, have you read the comic?
Oh, yes. I've been reading Batman Incorporated since the very beginning of the series, so I've been keeping up on that and followed it through some thick and thin moments, and and I know you have been reading Batman Incorporated, too.
Well, yeah, so I read the first, three or four issues, and then I stopped. It just wasn't... wasn't for me. I'm seem to be in the minority. I'm not a huge Morrison fan, so his writing in general just kind of doesn't appeal to me. But with such a big event, I kind of felt obligated. I needed to check it out just to more see how they handled it than anything else. So when it comes to that,
you read the death episode and the one that comes after the death issue and the one that comes after it, basically.
Yeah.
Right.
In general, I've been reading all the Batman stuff. So I read the death episode of that, the one after, and then all the other Bat comics. They had kind of their Requiem tie-in they had to do with everyone dealing with the death of Damian.
That's good. I'm glad you read that, because I did not read any of the surrounding comics. I'm only reading Batman Incorporated and Batwoman, and Batwoman doesn't interact with anything else. Those are the only Bat books I'm reading right now, so I have not seen how the other books and other writers have handled it. I do want to dial back just a sec. So I had taken it on face value that Grant Morrison, because of the kind of guy Grant Morrison is, when he said he had done this on purpose, was telling the truth. Because I can imagine him being angry and vocal about it if it wasn't what he'd wanted. Do you think that that's not true?
No, I take him at face value that he, I wouldn't be shocked if plans had changed at some point, but I really do think when he said that the story was really Damian's journey and his not being able to ever get out of the basically this mythic icon that is his father, I totally get it, and it's very Grant Morrison. So I believe it and have no doubt that this was part of some plan at some point. I'm kind of shocked that they did it, in the fact that when Damian started, he was just reviled. So many people hated him. I kind of enjoyed him as a character, and I thought he's grown, I don't even know how many years he's been around, but as a character, he's grown. And I've actually really, really liked him. So the fact that his popularity has grown, I'm a little shocked that they offed him.
Yeah. He really is a character that's grown on people. I think when people first heard it being announced, they were resistant to it. I didn't really know how it the character, I'm sorry, when the people first heard of Damien's existence, they were resistant to it. I at first didn't like the idea, but I turned to it really quickly because I think it was a good way to tell some new and interesting stories about his relationships with other people. And I've definitely grown to like the character and really enjoyed his dynamic with Nightwing. And I was really glad that they had this good and really obviously laid out, this was their last moment together, moment with him and Nightwing in the comic. But I had believed that this is what Grant Morrison had wanted, but I don't understand why this is what Grant Morrison wanted. I can only assume it's if he doesn't trust other people to play with his character, and he's leaving the book, maybe?
Well, yeah, it is. I mean, I'm pretty sure this arc is like the end of his run on Batman Inc. And I kind of got that feeling, too, of I created this character. I brought him into this world. I'm going to take him out.
Take him out of it. Yeah. But much like his mother says, right? His mother, Talia al Ghul, essentially says that.
Yeah, and I really did. I kind of felt like a slight meta thing with that. That was the vibe I got from Morrison about the character. And then Talia reflected that in the actual issue. So I'm really wondering how meta that was in kind of a commentary as a whole of him creating a character and killing a character.
It's completely meta. I mean, that would be the most Grant Morrison thing to do, you know, would be to offer the commentary in that way. I'm still sort of surprised that he did it, but I'm actually more just like, you know, like what do you know anything about like his plans to leave the book?
No idea.
I hadn't heard about that.
Yeah, I thought, or maybe I'm just mixing up him, that and his Superman. I think I might have just made that up. I know he left Superman or Action Comics. I probably just assumed he was ending Batman Inc., but I could be wrong.
Now I really want to know because
well,
to me that makes
what Google says while we chat.
I know exactly. Thank you. Because to me that makes an enormous difference. I do think that it almost only makes sense as a I'm taking my creation with me thing. If it isn't that, then I really don't get what he was trying to go for there. It's not like we need to see what would Batman be like if he was experiencing more tragedy. Let's find out. We kind of know that the drives of the character in the first place. You know, obviously, like, giving Batman a kid in the first place was sort of a sign of edging the character towards maturity, even though he already has legions of pseudo-children. I refuse to operate as if, you know, Batman has only been Batman for the past 5 years. It just wasn't
It doesn't make sense.
New universe is acting us. It's just not like, Dick Grayson is impossible if that's the case, you know?
Yeah, and plus the fact you got Dick Grayson and Damian alluding to him and saying, like, you were the best Batman or something like that, or I loved you as a partner. Like, when the hell did that happen in 5 years?
Yeah,
that's
it's just...
Batman's had a horrible career if he had his back broken, died, went into the past, Nightwing took over. Like, it's just a horrific...
All within the past 5 years, my goodness.
Yeah.
Who
Plus he
thought?
Killed how many Robins?
It's almost as if Batman Incorporated has been taking place in a pocket universe, as
yes.
they used to say in comics.
And that's what I thought. I actually thought Batman Inc. wasn't part of the New 52. And then they're like, we're going to kill him off and it's going to be part of the rest. And I was like, when did this become part of the 52?
It makes no sense in that way. They should have just... I think they didn't want to kill Batman Incorporated because it was a cash cow for them. But nothing about it makes any sense in the world of the New 52. It only makes sense as a story that you tell about a character that's very far into its process.
Yes, absolutely. But what did you actually think of, like, how Damian died and how it was handled within the comic?
Well, telegraphing it so much, I don't know. The only justification for telegraphing everything in such a big way was to make it a big event comic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then making it a big event comic comes back around to the idea of it being commentary that Grant Morrison is doing on his series and on his book. It works, you know, if this is about putting on a show of killing the character. But it doesn't work as literature that's just literature. Do you understand what I'm saying? And yeah. I'm not against killing off characters. I'm against the way comics often kill off characters in stupid ways that do nothing to drive story and are just a gimmick and just trying to sell books, and then they bring them back immediately, which is one of the reasons why I think Jean Grey being dead is being so good overall, is because they're actually giving her enough of a death to, you know, have it mean something. And of course she'll be back. Her name is Phoenix. Hello. But giving it some time for that death to be real, as opposed to what happened with Johnny Storm, for example, which is laughable and was just about trying to sell comics. But I don't want to get all Game of Thrones spoilery on people, but let's just say that there's a character in the book who is a child who gets, you believe is killed, is not actually killed, but very shockingly and immediately. And the way it's handled in the book, you don't see it expected, and it just crushes you when it happens. And what you had in, anyone who's watched the show knows what I'm talking about, and certainly anybody who's read the books. When you're, and especially actually when you're just reading the books, because when you're reading the books, you didn't have all this pop culture awareness of the writer's tendency to kill his darlings, so to speak. So it was really shocking that, you know, this young, adorable kid whose eyes you're seeing through out of nowhere seems to be dead. Brutal situation. And that worked on a very literary level because it was messing with your expectations about narrators, but also because it was well written in the character's voice. Meanwhile, what you have with Batman Incorporated is this big telegraphed death issue that I think only works if this is a commentary, you know?
Yeah, well,
So
to me, it was interesting is that, so you have him just basically getting stabbed, and it's been out at this point for 2 months, I'll say.
Nobody could have predicted. Sorry.
I mean, the fact they spoiled him getting killed, it's not a spoiler anymore. So, the act itself, to me, there wasn't anything to it. It's, for some reason, felt very empty, and maybe because I knew it was coming, wasn't quite as shocking and didn't hit me. And that's been part of my issue with the follow-up to all the Requiem stuff. I'll get that word right once. Is that and I think I said it about the main issue, is that the emotional aspect of it and the depth to it isn't there. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what has bothered me about the whole thing, in that, in all the follow-up issues, which even those haven't made sense quite on every single series has dealt with it, Batman's gone out.
Yeah,
there's been some inconsistencies and problems with it, but Batman's gone out and just beat the crap out of people. And that makes sense, but at the same time, you think there would be, he would be a bit more broken, and you'd have at least one of those issues dealing with him just sitting in a chair and reflecting how he, got Jason Todd killed, who may or may not have been killed. I haven't stopped reading Red Hood, so I have no idea if his backstory got changed at all. He's got his son killed, Damian killed, Grayson's left him. You think you'd be a little bit more broken and emotionally hurt by this? And that kind of was missing for me. And I said that about Morrison's writing. I was it was all action, it was all flash, but there was no depth to it. And a lot of the other issues kind of dealt with that in the same way. And I think that was kind of the big thing I've been missing out of all of them, is there just wasn't this cathartic, outpouring of grief by anyone. Let alone the fact that now Bruce Wayne's got to explain why his son is no longer at his manor. No one's going to ask about this. Yeah, I mean, I forget which. I think it might have been Batgirl. He calls Gordon, and I'm assuming to tell him what happened. And you think Gordon would be, have some sort of outrage, initially being like, I have a daughter. How the hell can you let this kid get killed?
Your kid, yeah.
Yeah, you think there would be some, as a father, would be outrage, just naturally a gut reaction to it, but there's not. Instead, he calls Barbara, which is great. And very in kind of character of Jim Gordon, but you think there would be a lash out at Batman being like, what the hell is wrong with you? And that was never, it's just not present. at all, and I haven't seen it. Like, I've seen him get pissed and punch stuff, but to me, that's not... something's missing.
Yeah.
Something's really missing.
And you're someone who's liked what's happening in some of the other Bat books, right?
Well, I've loved Snyder's run. I think Snyder's run is one of the best runs of Batman I've ever read, and definitely up there is one of the best... probably the best runs ever. I mean, it's just a fantastic...
You think that even he didn't handle it well because it was just forced on the story, right?
Yeah, yeah. The whole thing felt very forced with everyone else. Even how it was, like, tied into Detective, which has been having this interesting new Penguin storyline, it felt like it was just, like, shoehorned in.
And hasn't there also been a Batman and Robin book?
Yeah. So I'm a bit behind, and I haven't read last week, which was the first one without him. But yes, there is a Batman and Robin book, and I think they're going to, like, rotate some stuff and do some interesting things with that potentially. But
are they gonna? Because I thought maybe they'd be having Beryl come in to be the new Robin. You know, finally having another female Robin. There has been one before, and her name is Stephanie Brown, but apparently she never existed.
Well, there was also, the Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah, totally. Carrie Kelly's personality and Beryl, who's Squire from Knight and Squire, or was Squire from Knight and Squire, personalities remind me of each other a lot. So I could have totally seen that happening, but it looks like now Beryl's becoming Knight herself, and I don't know. I mean, I guess it's okay.
Yeah,
I mean, you're getting used as much, though, if that happens. She would be in comics more if she was Robin.
Yeah, and they have in the Batman and Red Robin number 19 is Carrie Kelly's debut in the DC 52. I just haven't read it, but at the same time, I'm skeptical as what they're doing. And if they had some long-term plan and the idea was to bring her in, I can understand now why they haven't been pushing Stephanie Brown at all. But it's kind of remains to be seen. I think in general, Batman shouldn't have a Robin for a little bit and should become dark and brooding and deal with loss a bit more than he has. But that's just, yeah, I mean, it's something's just missing. Like, DC needs to have a year or so of him just dealing with the loss of Robin. Or a Robin.
Yeah.
Because
it's something you can just push off.
Yeah, and because the other is, yeah, in this universe, it's been, 5 years, 10 years. We've, in theory, have missed issues with, you know, Dick Grayson leaving. We've missed, you know, whatever happened to Jason Todd, Tim Drake. Like, that hasn't been presented in this timeline. So I think as readers, we need to see how Batman deals with the loss of a Robin, because in theory we haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, that's right. That's definitely true.
So, and the other part of the discussion, not to complete pivot, because we're keeping going back and forth, because I think it's an interesting thing, is in the same week DC offed yet another kid, an Animal Man, which finished off its Rot World crossover with Swamp Thing, which has been excellent. Both of them have been amazing series. Buddy Baker, who's the main character in Animal Man, his son winds up getting killed. One, I thought it was really,
aww,
really
sad.
Effed up. Yeah, it's effed up that they killed two kids in 1 week. There's something really twisted about that. And then the second is the second issue of dealing with that, the after issue. So Animal Man number 19 came out, I think, 2 weeks ago, and I think that properly dealt with the loss of a kid and the fact that, you know, his wife, being a spoiler on this one, cover your ears if you don't want to hear, his wife's pissed off in the fact that he's a superhero, got their kid killed, you know, she wants a divorce, leave him, wants nothing to do with her, she's taken the other kid, like, to me, this is the
catharsis. And she has powers, right? The daughter has superpowers.
The daughter, yeah. And the wife is like, there's no way in hell I'm allowing our daughter around you. Look what happened to our son. And to me, this was like the proper reaction that seemed to be missing from Batman, where at least someone was pissed and angry and showed emotion and screamed and yelled like you think a parent would.
Yeah, I had read Animal Man from the beginning of the New 52. It's a comic that I would have continued to read if I felt like spending a lot of money on comics all the darn time. Because it was very smart and interesting and haunting, and the art was really creative, but it didn't make my final cut of things to keep reading, especially as I got more and more pissed off at DC Comics as an institution. But I just remember this wonderful scene of, gosh, what's his son's name?
Yeah, I'm really wishing.
Trying to like impress some girls when they're in a town, when they stop into this little town when they're on the run, and you know, it's just, you know, him being like, you know, my dad's Animal Man, and the girls are like, yeah, whatever, kid. And it's just really great, fun, normal interaction, and I loved his bad haircut, you know. I couldn't tell if it was an ironic
mullet
or an intentional mullet, but it was a mullet nonetheless. And it just makes me sad to think about him not being there anymore. I don't know. It's also believable, you know, kids are going to get killed in these kinds of situations. But
yeah, and it's one of those few things, and comic series tend to not deal with it, where they dance around the issue of here's this person with this dual life, and if they do have a family or personal life, they're putting their friends and family, girlfriends, boyfriends, whatever, in the line of fire. Here's a series that actually dealt with it and showed the ramifications of it, which I really, really liked. And the 19th issue, which is kind of fascinating, is with his daughter, Animal Man's daughter also having these powers. She's taken the death in a whole different way, which gets into a philosophical debate as to what is death and life and, you know, how do you celebrate, move on, because of what their powers are. As Animal Man, they're tied into, like, the life force of everything. So she's perceiving it in a totally different way than her mother, or even Animal Man. So it's been kind of, it was really good in that issue dealing with that particular thing. So a small detail that was, I think, held really, really well. And kind of like, it does up the whole issue in a much nicer way than I was expecting as to how, like, a little kid would deal with it.
Yeah. And that book definitely asks questions about, like, life and death and the nature of being a human, really. So it has an interesting space for that as well. And I'm sure that that character death is something that was intended by the writer.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a big calculation, and it wasn't about selling comics.
No, I mean, they didn't talk about it at all. Like, unless you were reading the series, I don't think you would have had a clue as to what was happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was, it's good. Like, it's kind of a restart of the series in a weird way. Swamp Thing's kind of having the same thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, they've gone on for 18 issues. So Animal Man's got the same writer with Jeff Lemire. Swamp Thing's got Charles Soule, who is basically, like, for these 18th issues, the two series have just been kind of swirling around each other and not really dealing with the greater DC universe, and it looks like they're finally being integrated into the DC universe. It's only took a year and a half. But it's a good jumping on point, and both are great series that I highly recommend to everyone checking out. But we can continue on the plans of killing someone else and DC Comics continuing. So there was a rumor a couple weeks ago that made the usual internet shitstorm. Josh Filikoff was supposed to write Red Lantern and Green Lantern Corps for DC Comics. He stepped off the titles. Around the rumor mill was that they wanted to kill Jon Stewart, and that's not what Josh wanted to do. There's been some hints that this is probably correct as to what was happening. All hell broke loose because Jon Stewart, for a large chunk of comic fans, is the Green Lantern everyone knows. He was on the cartoon series for a long time. You know, Hal Jordan was gone, so he was Green Lantern. He's also one of the few prominent minority characters in the DC universe.
And because it's the television show, he is the most high-profile Green Lantern that there was until somebody decided to cast comedic actor Ryan Reynolds as the staid superhero, who has no personality and I don't really care about in the first place, Hal Jordan. He has this built-in, I kept reading articles where parents were saying that their kids had always thought that John Stewart was the only Green Lantern because of the cartoon, you know, being their only interaction with the characters.
Which is funny, I'm not that old and should have been, roughly that generation that would have grown up with John Stewart, but still, Neil Gordon is Green Lantern because the first Green Lantern I started. So I don't quite have the connection.
I'm sorry, you were just breaking up. What did you say about Green Lantern?
When I was reading comics growing up, Jordan was the one that I read. So I don't quite have that connection as everyone else with John Stewart.
I remember Kyle as Green Lantern when I was reading comics in junior high.
Kyle was when I popped off.
But I wasn't a fan or anything, and I've never really been a fan of the character per se, but the idea of killing off their most high-profile African-American superhero in the DC universe is just stupid. And a character who's really interesting and very adult in a different way than a lot of the other characters are, who sometimes seem rather immature.
So I myself actually was, depending on how it was handled, and I'm going to throw that in first, and I know Josh, and the fan, actually know Josh, and fan of his writing in general, and think he could have handled it really well, but to me, there was a huge potential story-wise of offing John Stewart, because the guy is a war veteran, so he's seen horrible things. He's committed horrible acts as a Green Lantern. So my thought was, if you were to write the story and have him suffering PTSD and breaking down like veterans of, Afghanistan and Iraq or just any war in general is happening or has happened, and you handle it with that sort of focus and that that sort of respect. So you handle it really mature and all that. It could have been an amazing storyline.
But they still would have killed their African American superhero who would have nobody equivalent to replace him.
Yes. To me, that there's an issue with that.
It's a moral and a business failure.
Yes. Yeah, generally I would say the fact that they didn't have Jon Stewart in the movie, that they decided to go back for Jordan, or not even necessarily go back to Jordan, but basically make Hal Jordan such a high-profile person and relegate Stewart to the background, even behind Kyle Rayner, overall was a mistake, and that they probably should have focused on Stewart. And if anything, had given him his own series, would have been the smart move. But I would say that if it's handled right, the story could have been pretty impressive. That not saying that they would have handled it right, but
there's all kinds of stories could be told really interestingly, But I just think that it would have been a stupid move, and it would have pushed away fans and potential fans and children who would have seen someone to identify with in the comics. But it does just remind me how much more, DC, what are you going to do with Cyborg, right? What are you going to do with Vixen? It's time for them to really raise their game in those areas. Whenever I have conversations with people who aren't big DC Comics people, they don't even know who the African-American heroes from DC would be because everything is so firmly structured around the, quote, Trinity, unquote,
Yeah, you could say, maybe they would actually work to push the new Green Lantern, Simon Baz, but, let's be honest, the character's not, he hasn't clicked like I would hope that he would have clicked.
I think it's hard for him to have clicked when they have so many damn Green Lanterns running around everywhere and it's from Earth and it being unclear and just, I don't know. I don't see how it could have worked. I have to admit, I haven't really read much Green Lantern stuff from post 52 land, but I don't know. It seems sort of crowded and undirected, even though this entire thing is like all about how much the publishers love Green Lantern. Like they're
yeah.
huge Green Lantern. They've bent time and space to make everything work for them in ways that they haven't for other characters.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if anything, they need to do something good with John Stewart. They had an opportunity, they dropped the ball. As a whole, they're, you know, bringing up minority characters or pushing anything in the New 52 that's different has been fairly lacking. You know, it's definitely, you know, they had an opportunity and they haven't seemed to catch, you know, gone with the ball on that one. And
nope.
The outrage was definitely deserved. You know, it was just kind of interesting that this is what they're going to do of like, hey, we think there's too many Green Lanterns. We're going to off the black one. I mean, it's, you know, I as well have him like wear a red shirt. Like if I'm going to kill anyone, I'm killing
yeah.
Guy Gardner or Kyle Rayner.
Oh God. Yeah.
I mean, I think just in general, having Guy Gardner and Simon Baz or however you pronounce his last name, would have been a fascinating thing because you've got this rather brash, loud cop and this Muslim guy. I think the combination would have been actually interesting.
Yeah, totally. So I prefer Guy Gardner to Hal any day, for the record. Either of the versions of Guy Gardner, whether it's the really stupid version or the
Warrior
version. Warrior. But anyway, I think that would have been a fun dynamic. I might have actually been interested in that.
And it would have been something different.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of my issue with this latest Green Lantern Simon and the fact that they could have done, you know, he's Muslim, you know, he's got Arabic tattooed on his arm. He doesn't hide the fact
Wasn't he like a criminal or something?
Yeah, he accidentally steals the car with a bomb, and they think he's a terrorist. You know, there could have been, as a whole, there was an interesting opportunity there that I think the ball was dropped. Unfortunately, the ball was dropped. But, you know, hopefully someone will figure out what to do with the character. And, you know, do something interesting. He's now part of the Justice League of America as their Green Lantern. You know, having an American or, you know, an actual U.S. government-backed group and having him on the team, I think has a huge potential for statements that I don't think anyone's going to pick up, which I'm just, like, kicking myself. I think it would be a hell of a thing to do.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, that. On to other things.
Yeah. The entire state of DC Comics is just pathetic and awful. They're trying to run the damn thing into the ground. They're taking some intellectual property that we love with them in the process, and it's all very sad and wasteful. You know, I mean, I have heard people say that there have been edicts from Warner Brothers, basically, to like really just play down to the stupidest level for any of these comics.
Something is definitely amiss, and I still haven't put quite two and two together where the issues lie. But there's issues.
Clearly the leadership, you know.
Well, see, but the thing is it leadership or is it editors? I mean, well, you'll blame leadership in the fact that they're not clamping down, you know, leading, you know, but from what everyone said, it's editors versus creators, that leaders are saying, hey, this is the general direction, and then the creators work on that, and then the editors come in and be like, no, we're totally changing this, or I don't like this, where
and
the editors
crazy.
Are...
It's not even like they're testing it. It's not even like they're actually using marketing techniques or technology to test anything for what people actually like, which would be a horrible way to run the actual content, you know, form in the first place. But they're not even doing it on that. They're just doing it based on, I don't know, what kind of bizarre hormonal cycles, you know, middle-aged men are under. It's unclear to me.
It's going off of what's selling. So Batman's selling, so do more Batman. Superman is...
But they're unclear, but what they don't understand is why. Like, there's no... They don't understand why, and they have no way of knowing why because they're not using any smart marketing techniques to determine these factors.
No. And the marketing for comics in general is fairly paleolithic.
Sorry. This is a topic we talk about a lot because it makes us cranky, and we both deal with marketing in our actual jobs. So we're like, why are you doing this so badly?
Yeah, I mean, it's... We'll see. I mean, the interesting thing, though, is DC is... clearly trying to do something. They're bringing in a lot of the younger creators who are doing interesting things in other series for other publishers. So, hopefully.
Well, who are they bringing in now that I should be excited by? I'd love to hear some good news.
Justin Jordan, who has been doing great things with The Legend of and Strange Tales of Luther Strode, over-the-top violent comic. I think it's been fun. He's also been writing Shadow Man, which I've been enjoying, by Valiant. Trying to think the rest of it. Jeff Lemire is being used more and more. He was writing Animal Man. They have him doing some other stuff now. Charles Soule, who I mentioned before, who wrote 27, which is a great series from Image. He's got Strange Attractors, which is out digitally right now by Arkea. He's written Strong Man, which I think is just a pulp fun series. Everything he's written, I've enjoyed. He's actually got and you'll like this. When this comes out, I'm forcing you to read it. He's got a series called Letter 44, which is about a president coming into office, and the previous president leaves him a letter that has like a shocking twist. As to why he was running wars and developing technology and putting all this money into this stuff, is that there's a greater threat that the new president doesn't know about.
Hmm.
Cool series. I've read the script a while ago. I can't wait for this to come out. It's going to be really, really cool. And I'm trying to think who else. They're going with a lot of, like, I'll say not mainstream mainstream creators, which is good. It's a good move. Whether or not it will be pulled off, who knows?
Yeah. Well, no ladies.
I think they're up to, was it Bleeding Cool just had an article out that they're up to 3 female creators who are writing 5 comics.
They have women working for them now, but I'm asking, are there any new ladies who are being in the new batch of creators?
Well, they're up to 3.
It's not.
I couldn't tell you who the others are.
But there's nobody new, though.
I have no idea. I remember only
Gail. That's a thought. That's okay. Interesting to hear what, if anything, they may have going on. DC. So sad.
Yes. Potential. It hasn't quite gotten there. Some of the other big news we have, and this is kind of an interesting one because I didn't necessarily agree with a lot of the criticism in this. Uncanny Avengers, which you've been reading, correct? Yes.
Nope.
No?
I read the first 3 issues and that was it. Sorry.
Okay.
But I'm deeply familiar with the character of Havoc and perfectly prepared and equipped to weigh in on these matters.
Yes.
As far as the character of Havoc goes.
Interesting. So Uncanny Avengers is the Unity Avengers that's supposed to bridge the gap between the mutant universe and the superhero universe of Marvel Comics. In the latest issue, which came out about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, somewhere around there, Havoc, in a speech, stands up and says that he feels that the word mutant is a 4-letter word and he'd rather people not use it anymore. And that it is just being used is divisive, and he wants everyone to be seen as a person, not a label like mutant or human.
Which is a totally Havoc-y thing to say, because he is completely invisible as a mutant. He has no outside mutation, deformity, looking, he's a hot guy, whatever. His powers are under control right now, and he's always been very assimilationist. You know, he worked for the federal government. He is pissed as fuck at his Cyclops for Cyclops' separatist ways. All of this, totally something Havoc would say, totally in character. That's all fine. The question is, you know, how how the writer handled it in his own conversations about the character and
right.
about using the word mutant.
So, you know, writer Rick Remender, who seemed to actually agree with the idea of this concept that labels are a bad thing.
Which, again, I think is... it's like, oh, it's interesting that you think that, white dude. That's really interesting.
Well, so...
You know?
And you feel... And I kind of want to hear the other side, because I actually kind of agree with them in a weird way. I think, you know, celebrate everyone's diversity and history and all that, it's great, but aren't we working towards having a society where we don't see gender, we don't see color, we don't see race, we don't see any of that? I don't...
But the only people who say that they don't see those things, are people who don't have, who are themselves are privileged and therefore don't experience discrimination based on it. Like, we've moved to a point in that society where calling somebody racist is seen as worse than actually being a racist. We're, like, calling attention to the discrimination and biases that people have with them. And everyone has biases that, like, it's part of living in the world. So if you try to call attention, like, hey, look, the way you treated this person in this situation implies that you think less of them because of you know, their race or because they're transgender or whatever, then you're the one who's at fault for pointing out that there's something that they did that was inequitable. Like, him saying that, it, to me, is just part of the same school of thought that, you know, if only people would stop pointing out that they're being treated unfairly, people would stop being treated unfairly. And that's not how it works. You know?
That I can completely agree with. It's naive thinking.
Yeah.
The concept, though, I agree with. And it was interesting in that reading, a lot of people had issue with it, is many of them took your stance, and some of them just outright rejected even the concept.
Even the concept of, like...
Of basically a post-racial society, I think, would be the best term to use.
I think that it's something that, like, is almost science fiction-y to propose that we could have.
There's
Again,
Star Trek.
Things that happen in science fiction totally do happen, but they happen, like, a long time away, you know, and to try to act as if this is something, a reality that we'd be living under anytime soon is just laughable, you know.
Well, so... And during the whole thing, I was thinking about it is, you know, Star Trek came to mind. Star Trek was huge in the 60s, civil rights movement, and there was a series that talked about race, gender, sex, all that stuff, using science fiction without actually taking on those topics.
Yep.
You know, there's the very blatant one of the race where they couldn't get away with having something that's straight up, you know, black versus white. So they had one race being half black, half white, and the other one being half white, half black. And that was their episode talking about that. And to me, that seems to kind of be what he's trying to do, or, you know, go down that road and have those type of conversations. Clearly he's stumbling in how he's talking about that in general, but it seemed like just the concept in general caused a shitstorm online.
Well, I think obviously the other thing is that you have to realize that for a lot of mutants, like, you know, they have, there are mutants, like, remember Beak from New X-Men?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Who's basically just fucked, right? He doesn't seem to be able to have any positive powers from his situation. You know, he's just challenged. He can't fly. He just looks like a chicken fetus. And, like, that really sucks for him, you know. And so, you know, how this stuff plays out for different individual people is going to be really different based on what they look like and how their powers work or don't, you know. I mean, there's just going to be a range of different experiences amongst the characters in that world based on that. But I also don't see how... I mean, I think it would be, DC, I'm sorry, Marvel set up this concept of mutation being this one set of changes. They don't have a scale of mutation, really, which is what there would be in real life, right? Like, for example, I was born with one wisdom tooth, which is unusual. Usually you have an even number of wisdom teeth or none. So that's a mild mutation on my part, which has affected my life in almost no way whatsoever and is completely irrelevant, you know. So, but, you know, on the other hand, if I had a different form of mutation, if I had some awesome superpowers, or if I, you know, like, looked like Glob Herman, that would impact my life in a very different way. And I think that the more visually and publicly branded you are as being a mutant, the more that becomes part of your cultural identity. And that trying to erase it and say that everyone is just the same is actually taking away some people's ability to, like, have a culture that accepts them and embraces them. That's their own subculture, essentially.
I can see that. That I completely get. And I think that presented the way you've said it is where I can sit there and say, all right, I totally see the other side now. Or at least understand what the other side was saying.
But I'm also just disappointed in how Remender responded to people trying to have that conversation. But it looked like he dialed it back and he sort of was like, okay, I'm going to, like, stop yelling at people, basically.
It was
or
a little childish.
No, but maybe him and Jason Aaron, they were both sort of continuing to just be like, stop telling me what to do, growl, growl, stomp, stomp. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that the thing that he completely messed up, and I think he kind of admitted it half-assedly, is he did go at it like a child, and while people were yelling at him online, you know, he stooped to the troll level and mouthed off back, which you can't do. You know, the internet is full of assholes. You got to suck it up if you're going to be a public person. That's part of being a public person. So, yeah, he didn't handle it quite maturely enough. And I would love to have this conversation with writer friends of mine, you know, if I can ever get a chance, of how much the public yelling at you weighs in on, you know, just one, doing your job, your creative process in general, of, like, just seeing, you know, there's always...
They're going to have an artistic policy against acknowledging that it does in any way, shape, or form, but we know for a fact that it does. I do think it's generally better to not yell and to engage in conversation, and there's definitely times where it's just above and beyond, like, I'm sorry, like, fuck you, right? But it's better to try to, like, educate people in ways that they will listen to you rather than just being shutting you down, you know?
Yeah,
but it's our job as fans to go and explain those things to people.
You know, someone who I thought who's handled it really, really well, and I've talked to him online, hopefully he'll be on a guest on the show, is Dan Slott, who's writing Superior Spider-Man. The dude received death threats over what he's done with Spider-Man.
That's awful.
And I will even bring up is that the entire comic book community and bloggers is I'm waiting for the apology to Dan Slott. Is in the beginning of Superior Spider-Man, he was bringing up the concept of Doc Ock's in Spider-Man's body, he's making out with Mary Jane, and everyone's like, oh, Dan Slott supports rape. And we talked about it on the show months ago when it was starting to kind of come up. And Ken, when he was on the show, both said that more than likely what's going to happen is Doc Ock's going to be presented with this opportunity to sleep with Mary Jane, and he's going to be like, nope, because he's either going to realize it's wrong or he's such a pompous ass, he's going to go swing off and be Spider-Man and being like, yeah, I don't have time for the girl. And predictably, we were right. Ken and I were both right in that. And, I mean, people were calling him a complete misogynist, rapist, rape apologist, like horrible things online. He handled it very much with class. In general, I think the internet and all those jackasses need to apologize to him, but... You know, he's a shining example of what to do, where he engaged and tried to have conversations, and when things went over the line, he was like, yeah, I'm not tolerating threats. You know, I'm taking them seriously and reporting them.
Well, the thing is, like, I you know, I don't know that story that closely, but it seemed to me like Doc Ock is a villain, and villains are going to do some villainous stuff.
Yeah.
So...
Of course he's going to take advantage of being Peter's body. He's an asshole. Like, he's a villain. This is what villains do.
I think it's more like if you haven't been following the story and to understand that context. You know, he could have done a better job of explaining around it, though, but it seems like it's not like he's saying, oh, Doc Ock is, like, great, or that Doc Ock has a deep understanding of consent. I do think that there was a concern when people were feeling like the comic wasn't taking a moment to pause to be like, hello, notice how she is not actually able to consent to the situation. This is fucked up. But it seems like there actually was space created for that.
Yeah, the way he wrote it was icky. You were supposed to cringe and being like, this is totally messed up. And he did it, and he did it right. And predictably, when pushed, you know, when the time came for Mary Jane and Hibbett to go further, you know, he actually had that pause like we thought he would, especially because Dan Slott kept on saying, guys, you've read one issue. Give it a bit. We actually do something with this and do something right with this. And no one was listening. So, I mean, it...
But, just because there's so little good faith that we have right now, because we've just had so many horrible, terrible, sexist moments happen. Like, people have just been refrigerated to death. So, if there's any opportunity where you think someone's going to just do that again, you know, that's the reaction. Like, so I understand why people react. Obviously, like, people should have shut up and waited and see what happened. But I also understand why people didn't. I feel bad for Dan because he didn't deserve it. But the medium was asking for it, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, it was
the medium has keeps making these mistakes over and over again.
I mean, he definitely, it occurred during a time where trust was very low, and that was, those type of things were a big issue. And I got it, and I kind of want to talk to him when we eventually do talk to him. He seemed very cool about it. And ask them, like, how much does that weigh as a creator? Like, I just got to imagine there's a point you want to snap and be like, you know, it's screw you people, and go off, which is kind of like what Remender did. And he apologized for it, but, you know, I understand it. Like, I had to hold myself back numerous times at my job. Like, there's things that you just hear the negative over and over and over and over again, and it weighs on you. So, I mean, I can appreciate it, the snapping. But, yeah, wow, did we get sidetracked on that conversation.
Because we're talking about stuff that's messed up. Oh, fan reactions.
Yes, fan
reactions. Pressure on writers. So, they're going to tell you it doesn't make a lick of difference, but it absolutely does.
Yeah.
It's a bad policy for them to let themselves know that they're open to hearing from people.
Yeah, I mean, I think they, you know, could at least admit, be like, yeah, it sucks having this happen to you, you know, weighs on you just emotionally, but I'm here to tell a story, that's my job. It, to me, is like, that's the reaction that I would expect. But back to the mutant question. I think the big one, we kind of went back and forth on this, so is mutant actually a bad word? We talked about this on an email, was we both said that there was way better words to use than mutant.
Except that is the word that people have used to identify themselves with. And you have this moment of cultural, you know, taking back that name and using it as a source for pride, which has been going on in the comics for decades. So at this point, it is a word that's a term of pride. So it's sort of out of place to try to make that argument now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think we had a conversation, not just you and I, but other people too, was that even a bad word? I kind of took it as it was. Like, yeah, it was a term that has had both connotations, but it definitely had its negative points. Like, you know, the Reavers and the, I can't believe I'm totally blanking out, Stryker and his church.
Mutant Liberation Front, or no, the church, you mean the
one that kept
darn
on killing
it.
The kids. Yeah, that kept on killing all the kids.
The thing that just happened a few years ago, those people,
But they, to me, when they use, and like Trask and all them, when they use the word mutant, they're, you know, there's often an adjective attached to it, but they have a very negative, connotation to it. Like, mutant is a bad thing, and when they say it, it is a bad thing.
Yes, but they're also, mutants also have mutant pride. I mean, like, so many things that people have used as slurs are, you know, appropriated by the people who they've said it to. I mean, like, when you go to study queer theory in an academic setting, like, it's called queer theory. It's not called, let me list an incredibly long list of every single gender combination, possibility, or range that is outside of cisgendered, heterosexual, traditional sex relations. Like, that's not what the classes you take in college are called, you know. So, you know, I do think that saying mutant is in the spirit of saying queer, you know, and it's a term that's been embraced by that community. It's an inclusive term. I mean, remember when Spider-Man came to terms with the fact that he was a mutant?
Yeah, I mean,
in the 90s. Do you remember in the 90s there were a few issues
with Spider-Man? I
remember,
and they kind of just, yeah, and they totally
ignore it now.
They kind of dropped
it, but it's true, like, and there are mutants who are more mutant-identified mutants, and there's mutants who are less mutant-identified.
And it was interesting, because a lot of people, when this was kind of blown up, equated it with certain words used for African-Americans. I think it's more of a thing for the gay movement now, and that, to me, the use of it, like, queer, I think, was the first thing I thought of.
Yeah.
Is more appropriate than, you know, maybe other words. And that seemed to be, I think, a better comparison. Because a lot of people decide to be like, oh, this is like the N-bomb. And I'm like, no, it's not. That's a word that's always had a negative connotation. You know, back to slavery, that was a bad word. Whereas queer kind of has gone
back and
forth.
It was always intended as a bad thing, but people just decided that, like, okay, so we're different, so that's okay, you know.
Yeah.
It is a different relationship with the word entirely.
And to me, it just seemed a bit more, that seems to be more appropriate and more the case, or more fit the situation than other words.
Yep. And again, like, it totally makes sense for Havoc to come and say this, but I don't want it to sit as if, you know, I mean, but I think Havoc's wrong. I think he's naive, and I think that he's speaking from a lot of privilege, thinking that you can erase any recognition of the fact that there are people who are living in different circumstances than him and who are, you know, deal with different things that he does on a daily basis and have a different cultural alignment than I have.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, I definitely
but
think
Havoc
that.
Havoc would totally say that.
Yeah, it totally within character, beyond naive, like beyond just the naive thing, but that's kind of Havoc. He's always been on the fringe of the mutant cause in general.
Yeah.
So, of course, he's going to kind of have this point of view.
So how have the other characters in the series reacted to this? Because I haven't been reading it. I like the three issues I'd read of the book, but I haven't put it on my pull list. So how have the other characters reacted?
They haven't yet. the issue hasn't come out yet. So the next one hasn't come out yet. So it might be out. I don't think it's out this week, so it'll probably be out next week. I'm very interested in seeing. You've got Rogue, who's on the team. Again, a character who looks totally normal. You know, I'd imagine I think it'll be more interesting to see how the outside world reacts to them as opposed to the team.
Okay.
The team in general has been more focused on the issues with having Havoc lead and Captain America having to listen to him than anything else.
Havoc left.
No, Havoc still is on the team.
Oh.
He's actually leading the team.
Having who leave?
Oh, no, having Captain America, like, listen to Havoc leading.
Oh,
is
leading.
That's,
I'm sorry,
yeah,
I heard that
leading.
You said the word leave,
L-E-Z. Oh, no, leading.
L-E-A-V-E. Never mind.
Yeah.
So
that seems to be the biggest focus of the series so far.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and how do you actually have a unity team?
Which is interesting and surprising that they wouldn't have sort of come up
with
that. That concept is an interesting concept.
Yeah, it's a very interesting concept. I'm kind of shocked they haven't done that yet. But yeah, I mean, it's a good concept. I'm crossing my fingers as a whole of the series. I don't think is quite up to snuff as what it should be. But
well, the art has been disappointing. I mean, the art is fine. However, they have one of the best artists around. He should be doing better than that.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a lot of what I'm seeing in Marvel now. Artists who have done amazing things and their work just isn't quite up to snuff. Age of Ultron is the big thing I'm thinking of.
Oh, yeah. What the hell is that all about? I just see ads and I ignore them.
So it's in continuity. The series just kind of, like, starts and Ultron has taken over the world.
I hate when he does that.
And it's this dystopian world, very few heroes are left. So the first five issues is them trying to figure out what the hell happened. and it's literally the people standing around talking, being like, what the hell happened? It's so decompressed, so slow. Like, I've been savaging it in my reviews. Just beating it down. Brian Michael Bendis is writing it.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Brian. Why? Maybe you only can write so many good comics in a month. Like, maybe even Superman. Like, most comics of high quality produced in the shortest amount of time, the Stephen King of comics can only go so far. I don't know.
Yeah, it's been very, very disappointing, and I've been having some issues with it and just been beating it to death in my reviews. Like, it's pretty bad.
And, you know, I just think John Cassaday is one of the best comic artists around by a long shot, and there have been some individual striking images in the comics. But overall, it's not living up to the awesomeness that we know he has. And I don't know, is he doing, like, too many other things at the same time? I don't know.
I'm not good with artists, so I honestly can't say. Brian's the one doing Age of Ultron, and it's been the same issues. I've been seeing similar issues. Like, one of the issues, She-Hulk and Luke Cage for, like, two pages are cross-eyed. And that might not necessarily be Hitch's issue.
That's some, like, 90s level sloppiness.
Yeah, it's just very sloppy. I mean, there was, I think it was the end of the first issue. Captain America's in a pose that's just not even possible without losing a few bones.
So he's become a woman, is what you're saying.
No, not even.
Wah,
like,
wah, wah.
Yeah, it would be one thing if it was a broke back pose. He just looks broke.
He's just broken. Aw.
But yeah, it's...
Well, let's talk about something we like really quick, because we're getting later. I just want to give a great big hug to FF. Continue to give a great big hug to FF. That is just the sweetest, funniest, most interesting, pleasing to the eye superhero comic around. You know, I'm just truly enjoying it. Oh, I'm sorry. Young Avengers is like the best, but the second best. It's very tight. It's very close running. FF, it's just been lovely. I don't remember if we ended up talking about the Valentine's Day issue.
With Jen.
Back.
Yeah.
But I can't
We haven't. We need to talk about it at some point.
Oh, how wonderful is that? For one thing, I want little, like, Morlock children to follow me around and eat my makeup and ask me questions adorably. I'd be like, and I'm like, oh, they're eating nail polish, which I can assure you is a highly toxic, but it's okay because they're little Morlock babies, so I'm sure they're fine. That's probably like vitamins for them. I just wanted to hug them. They were so adorable, and they have to learn how to make evil from Bentley 23. It was, I have walked around my apartment saying, a date is a fruit. A fruit. Like, I have a voice in my mind for the Morlock children and how exactly they sound. I have voices in my mind for Woo and Vil, who are the little fish-headed kids. Oh, my God. The characterizations of the children in this is just so lovely. And I love, love, love the art.
Yeah, absolutely one of the best series to come out of the new Marvel Now. Really.
Oh, my God.
It's
the opposite of Marvel Now. Like,
mm-hmm.
It is. You need to know about comics to understand what in God's name is happening in this book. It's just interesting because I read this and I was like, you know, this is a comic that I think a lot of my friends who don't read comics could like, based on the kind of humor and the quirky approach and the storytelling it uses. But it does assume that they know who the fuck White Wingfoot is, and they don't. So maybe it's not. So they think it's something that could have been a good intro comic, but it's not. You know. I was so in love with that Valentine's Day episode. I just wanted to show it to all my friends and be like, see how awesome and sweet and hilarious and fun this is? And then it's like, oh, right, but you're not going to understand some of these things. Of course, look, I still don't know why one of the kids is a head in a jar. I've looked it up on the internet. There's inadequate information to explain.
The moloid,
why
yeah.
One of the moloids is a head in a jar.
Yeah, I forgot what the deal is with
Morlocks?
It.
I'm sorry, the moloids.
Yeah.
The only thing that I just said where I said Morlock, I meant Moloid, excuse me.
It's all good. I knew what you meant.
There is a Morlock child, though. He's got a little helmet that projects images, which is helpful when he eats people's pancakes. Without asking.
It's a great series. It's one I've really, really loved. Continue to rave about The Massive. It's not out until I believe next month, but I just finished Kainz's graphic novel called Red Handed. And kind even for folks who have reading it, Mind Management is all out by
I'm sorry, I can't hear you at all. This is all totally
weird.
Can you repeat that?
Oh, so I just finished the next graphic novel, Red Handed, which is out in May at some point. He's currently writing Mind Management for Dark Horse, which is a brilliant series that is so entertaining. The comic has to deal with CIA operatives sort of thing that have been kind of moving mankind, and they have the abilities to predict the future, or if they write certain things, they can get you to have certain emotions. Really weird, brilliant series, and Red Handed is that, but a kind of crime noir thing going on. Really, really cool. I've been reading a lot of graphic novels lately. I don't know why.
Yeah. Well, there's cool stuff out there, you know. I don't know. I did enjoy the couple issues of Star Wars by Brian Wood that I picked up.
It's
I'm
been
not
good.
A big Star Wars person, really. As a child, I was a Star Wars obsessive. As an adult, I'm not a huge Star Wars person, but I enjoyed them. I thought they were quality writing, quality art, cool concept with Princess Leia.
Yes.
Young Avengers continues to kick ass, take names, and just be wonderful in every way, shape, and form. I know you liked it, but weren't as crazy about it as I am. Have you continued to read it?
For which?
Young Avengers.
Yeah, I've been reading it. It's good. Like, I'm not blown away by it. It's gotten better. There's aspects I really like about it.
What are the aspects that you really like?
So the humor of it is great, the way that it's willing to break barriers and just put in things that you wouldn't normally see in the comics, like the Tumblr page in the beginning, or I think it was the last issue where they were literally breaking the panels of the page and walking around the white space. I thought it was really, really cool. Like, there's some great stuff that they're doing with that. I think overall, to me, still the story's a little choppy as to how they're all coming together. I'm not quite sold in that. But, the writing and the characterizations, like, I really do like that part of it. I think it's, like, the plot as a whole is what I'm not quite digging at, if that makes sense. Like the characters, like the writing, the plot, I'm not...
I think it's just great, children and parents. Motif.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know. It, for me, it's not something, just personally, it's not something that I would sit there and be like, oh, I absolutely have to read it. It hasn't quite grabbed me. Like, I really like the writing, and that's kind of what sold me so far. But that's it right now.
Okay.
Sorry.
And the art is awesome.
Yes, I really do. I do like the art.
I'm telling people who haven't heard me say this before, but I do think that McKelvey is one of the only comic book artists who's aware of the clothing that people actually wear in real life and, like, will draw people in clothing that they would actually wear in real life.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, so that's been magnificent. I'm still rolling along with Journey into Mystery. It's not as good as the... run was with that Karen did with Loki, but I have enjoyed the Sith story that Eminem is telling now, and I don't know, I guess sort of the way it wrapped up feels a little bit like a cop-out return to status quo piece, but the art has been really good, and I do like the characterization, and there were some really funny bits in the last issue. Are you still reading that one?
I am. I think I'm completely in agreement with you. Like, really like the art. Some of the characters I had issue with Sif towards the beginning of the story arc, but overall, again, like with Young Avengers, the story arc, I just even more so with this, the story arc didn't get to me. I just thought, like, it seemed out of character, and how it was resolved. I was just like, okay, so we're back at the status quo, and you've brought in some new characters. Great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Still reading Captain Marvel.
Great story.
I think that the scare that it was going to get canceled might have been manufactured.
Maybe. I think the story's great.
Not by their book, but I think fans might have been pushing that out there.
Yeah. Also reading that. Like, story great. Art has been kind of iffy. But this, like, the great comic. Like, people should be reading this. And I think what they're doing now with her not really being able to use her powers is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. It's and her frustration dealing with it. I like the quote unquote death bird, where it's like she's essentially impersonating, you know, this other villain, and the character who you haven't really seen the face of yet, who's manipulating it all. It's really interesting. It's finally building an interesting mystery around it. I think the comic's getting stronger.
Yeah. Overall, it's improved. I really do like it. It's been cool. So, other than that, like, it's, and the comics have been good. There's been some solid stuff, but nothing's like completely blowing me away. It's all the same old stuff we've been talking about. Massive Conan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stuff like that has been what's been catching me.
Well, I definitely have some stuff that will be coming out soon. I'm looking forward to reading, I guess it won't be until the summer, Gail Simone doing Red Sonja. How freaking perfect is that?
So it's going to be awesome. It's going to be very awesome. I'm also really looking forward to the new DC series of The Movement, of her basically taking on the 99%.
Oh, yeah. When in God's name is that going to be out? I keep thinking things are going to be out sooner than they are.
I have no idea. Not soon enough. But you'll definitely believe me. We'll be talking about that when it comes out. I'm really, really looking forward to it, to see what DC does, but more specifically what she does.
Mm. Yeah, it'll be creative and fun. I haven't been reading her Batgirl recently. I hear that she introduced a trans character, which is awesome, and about time, and I do trust Gail, of all people, to do a good job of it, so... I think some people said that they felt like it was forced, but based on the limited stuff I saw, it did not seem forced. It seemed, like, pretty normal.
I've got a good article. I will send it to you about that. We can discuss it next week.
Sounds like a plan. God, you're saying I have to go read Batgirl now? Fine, I'll go.
No. It's just this article about the issue where it says, you know, it's great she introduced the character. How it was done was piss poor.
Gotcha.
Which I thought was interesting. And the discussion under below that, or within the comments, was really, really good, too. So it's well worth the read. Not a normal site I kind of go to. So we should definitely talk about that next week.
Sounds like a plan.
So.
Well, thanks,
cool.
Guys. Thank you for waiting for us and having us back again. And we will be talking with you on Monday.
Yes.
For you next time out.
Hopefully we'll make this 2 weeks in a row. I wanted to end the show again. You know, thoughts out for Boston. I did want to bring up Boston Comic Con is this upcoming weekend, and they are spreading the word that it's still a go. The show's going on. They're going to kick ass. They are asking people though to be mindful of their cosplay and to leave any weapons at home, which at this point kind of seems one. Smart thing to do because you don't want to deal with the cops, but two, also in good taste. But everyone go have fun. Absolutely support Boston Comic Con. And, you know, give a nice middle finger to all the people who perpetrated this act.
Sounds like a plan.
Everyone,
a reminder.
Everyone, thanks for listening. On to next week, and have a geeky week.
Bye.